Welcome to another episode of That So Cincinnati. Today, we're going to talk about the growth of Cincinnati and a lot of housing needs. And to do that, we're going to let Burl take a vacation. And I have a special guest host today, an expert on all of these things, the Inquirer's development reporter, Sydney Franklin.
Hi, Sherry.
Thank you for helping me.
Of course.
Before we do anything, we have to say happy anniversary to Sydney.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
It's her 2-year anniversary at the Inquirer. Short or long, how does it seem?
Oh my gosh, it feels just right, actually. I do feel like now I've lived here my whole life, which isn't true. I'm from Louisville, everyone. But time has kind of flown by. I honestly love it so much.
It is the best thing about Cincinnati. You do feel like you've lived here your whole life. So today's special guest is Councilman Reggie Harris. Both she and I have had a lot of conversations with him over recent weeks, I guess years at this point, about something called Connected Communities, this huge initiative that the city's working on to give an overview to the city's very old zoning code. And I know it sounds like, you know, a little dull, but
it's not.
Sydney and I promise that it's not. And so we're going to talk to Reggie about that today. But first, there's tons of housing news. Sydney has a story like every day. I don't know how she does it. So
do you.
Well, you know, everyone knows how crazy council is. This is every day is a new thing. So, but we heard some, you know, really great news up around UC last week, and you had a story about that, speaking of housing.
Yeah, exactly. So for some time now, UC has been planning to expand just south of campus with a $100 million investment that will include 4 dorms. And it's official now. It's happening. And this is a 4-dorm complex with 1,300 units. And that's huge because UC is growing like crazy. It's about to graduate its largest class. And it seems like every year more and more people want to go to that school, but there is not enough housing in Clifton Heights or the surrounding neighborhoods. So private developers are picking up the slack, and now the actual university is too. So this is a University of Cincinnati construction project. It'll also include 20,000 square feet of rec space for the students and a like police safety hub.
Both of these things are super. I wish the latter wasn't true. Both of these things are actually very important for today's young people. Safety.
Yes.
Their parents care about safety. They're not going to send their kids off to a college where there's not safety. And I have to say, one of my friends just took their daughter on all of their college tours and were blown away by Ohio State's recreation center.
Oh, really?
And how large and amazing it is. I mean, today, I mean, these young college students really care about fitness and all the things that it offers you. It's so important to life. You don't have to play football at Ohio State. There's all kind of other things where you can, you know, participate. You don't have to be on their official dance team. You can take dance classes.
Right.
And so these are things that are important when it comes to college choice. And so it's exciting to see that's part of the plan.
Absolutely. And it kind of connects with our discussion with Reggie later today, because we're also talking about how building more housing brings in more amenities to neighborhoods. And this singular housing project has amenities for the students to live, work, and play, and hopefully eat something, which our neighborhoods need too.
This is true. So I do have a question. How did they find the space to build all of this?
There's a like 2.1 acre site across from, you guys might recognize this, there's like a CVS, and if you ever went to the old like Mad Frog, which was like a music venue and bar.
I'll say maybe. I'm a little bit too old to have been there, but I'll say maybe I've been there.
So Clifton Heights, I'm trying to pull up the boundaries for everybody, but it's on the corner of East McMillan and Vine Street. So really just take Vine all the way and the hill starts to really get hilly.
Is the Kroger up there too?
The Kroger's just beyond, but yes.
Okay. So that is a good place to build dorms. Pretty walkable.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of space. This was actually one of the last remaining vacant plots of land.
All right. Well, they're using it for housing. So
as they should.
All right. So Reggie's here. So why don't we bring him on and let's keep talking about housing. Special guest time here on That So Cincinnati. I'm excited to welcome Reggie Harris, who you guys are going to be hearing a lot about in the next coming weeks because of Connected Communities. Welcome, Reggie.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You know, this is going to be the biggest topic coming up. So we thought this would be the perfect time to have you as a guest. I've been very neglectful about having the council members as podcast guests. So we should have had you way long ago.
Well, I'm happy to be here. This is perfect timing. So,
but before we dig into like the big topic, it's the podcast. So we like to get to know our guests a little bit. You've been on council now. Do you count
2 years
days?
And 4 months.
All right, months. We counted in months. And you, I have to say, really, we didn't know a lot about you before you ran for council. You had kind of been circling things and starting to get involved. So why don't you tell people how you got involved in the city?
Yeah, so my husband and I moved here in July of 2015. So we moved here because of him, because of his job. He likes to make the joke that I was the trailing spouse. And so he got a professorship at Miami University. And when we moved to Cincinnati, to be really honest, it was very hard for me. For my husband, you know, when you get a job in an academic setting, there's a lot of like community built in, right? You have your people in your department and you have lots of department talks and events and there's like a welcome event. I had gotten a job at what was the Children's Home of Cincinnati, now Best Point, and I was a therapist at Withrow High School. And so I just like went into a job and we didn't know anyone here. And a lot of my colleagues were from here. And they had families and they had, you know, lives. And so I always joke, like, I never really was like invited to like a work happy hour. So I didn't have any community.
Very hard to make friends as an adult.
It's very hard to make friends as an adult. And I think it was also really hard because, you know, many Cincinnati's are generational Cincinnatians, right? And so they have met their partners here and they have maybe have gone to school here. So people have very busy lives, right? They have their family, which is down the street, their partner's family is down the street, their college friends, their high school friends. And so I met a lot of people who were really welcoming of me in the sense that, like, you know, they were glad that I was here and very friendly, but I just didn't have any community. And so the first year and a half was really hard.
Sydney, how 2 years, right?
2 years, almost to date.
She's been, you do find a community in the newsroom. It's probably very much like your husband found.
That's
like,
right.
We're all friends.
Right. Absolutely. And I had a couple friends who lived here and grew up here. So I had someone to like plug in with and get to know others. But yeah, I've heard the same thing about the Cincinnati locals.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, listen, this is a tenure track job. We're here. We bought a house. Reggie, you need to get it together. So I just started to volunteer. And so the first thing I did was I lived in Northside, and my friend Leo DeCruz was actually running for state rep in the 32nd district. This was, you know, when it was the 32nd. This was back in 2015. This was the fall of 2015. And so I just volunteered on his campaign. I had never volunteered on a campaign before. And so I got to meet a lot of people through doing that. And then as a newly sort of minted social worker, I joined the board of the National Association of Social Workers, so the Ohio chapter. Through that, I got involved with PACE, which is the Political Action for Candidate Election, and they were starting that up. And so I started running the endorsement process for the social workers. So, you know, the 16, 17, 18 cycles were coming up, and I got to do the endorsement interviews for folks who were running for office. And
did you go down to the council level, or were you just like state reps?
No, council level, okay. Yeah, state reps, like just all the way up. So I got, again, to start to meet people and get a sense of things. And in so I did that for a year. And then in April of 2017, the National Association of Social Workers, Region 6 is this region, we had our annual sort of event, and we gave the Outstanding Elected Official Award to Yvette Simpson. And I'd done her endorsement process.
Councilwoman, former mayoral candidate.
Former councilwoman, Yvette Simpson,
woman
former mayor.
Of all trades these days.
That's exactly right. And so I had gotten a chance to talk to Yvette for the endorsement interview. I had gotten a chance to talk to people who had worked with her. And just as an observer of her in council, just saw that she was like a very engaged and kind of beloved person. So I had to write an introductory speech about why we were awarding her this award. And I like public speaking. And so I kind of wrote like a barn buster of a speech. And, you know, this was like post-Trump getting elected and folks were having a lot of feelings. And so, you know, I'm a deeply optimistic person. So I started, you know, rooted this sort of conversation and this speech in optimism. And Yvette came up to get her award and she said, "Who is this man? And we need to get him into office."
I can confirm. The first time I really heard about you is through her.
Just through that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had actually never really thought about running for office. I was interested in politics moving here because of the endorsement process, but I always thought like kind of like as a volunteer or maybe even like working for a think tank or something like from a policy perspective. And so a couple months later, Yvette set me down and she was like, "Listen, I think that you would make a great elected official. You know, you need to get to know folks here to get to know the city." And so she just kind of gave me a curriculum. And it was like, you should do the Urban League's Urban Leaders Program and you should talk to these people and you should understand these things. And she just, I still wasn't convinced that I was going to run, but I thought it was a great professional development blueprint. And again, like, I didn't have anything to do. So I did it. And I did it for about 2 years. And in 2019, I said, I actually think that I want to run, right? I had started working for the Community Builders, an affordable housing developer, started recognizing larger systemic issues that were impacting residents and people's lives. And so I did it. And I did every campaign training program you can imagine. Social workers had one. I did New Leaders Council. I did the Democratic Party's one, you know.
So, but you kind of like just briefly passed by something that's super important right now. You come from a background, so it's social work for sure, but you're working for community builders.
Yes.
And I've heard you talk about this. And this is really, it seems like a lot of your roots in understanding the housing issues of Cincinnati, that it's just not a roof over your head.
That's right.
Can you
that's
talk
right.
a little bit about that job and what you learned there?
So, So the Community Builders is a national affordable housing developer, 14 states, 33 cities. And the division that I worked in was called Community Life. And it was essentially like enhanced resident services. And what we did was we said, well, we knew if we're going to bring affordable housing development into communities that had experienced this investment, we're going to encounter these larger issues, right? Lack of access to childcare, lack of access to grocery stores. So my job was figuring out, how do we build these amenities into the project? How do we partner with local early childhood education centers, community councils, organizations to make sure that the residents that are living in those buildings have access to the amenities that they need? And that's just, that opened up this whole world of understanding housing, right? I remember, it's a small thing, but I think it's an important thing. I remember going in a monthly maintenance meeting and looking at some of our buildings, and some of our buildings had these natural ebbs and flows where there were a lot of kids in buildings and then older people in buildings, right? And the buildings that had lots of kids in them, we replaced doors like 4 times the rate than we did with like older people. And I was like, what is this about? They were like, when you have kids in buildings, there's just more wear and tear. Kids.
This is
wear
true.
Things down,
no one wants to see my basement walls. I was like, how did that get there? How did that like ding in the wall get there? And my son is like, I don't know. I was like, well, I didn't put it there and your dad didn't put it there. So
then who put it there?
I don't mean to be a detective, but.
But, yes. Right. And so the financing model, the operating budget, it's a different beast when you have a large multifamily where, you know, you're going to have a lot of kids versus like a building with more adults, right? I use that example because when you talk about not only building housing, you have to think about the maintenance of housing. And you have to think about, is the financial model for this house, for this apartment building, the rents that we are collecting, are we going to be able to keep pace with maintenance, keep pace with weather, right? Keep pace with all of these things. That just like opened my mind all the way up. And then as I was working at the Community Builders, we were expanding in the region. So my purview was just Avondale Town Center in the neighborhood of Avondale. And then my portfolio opened up to a building in Cleveland called the Commodore. And then my portfolio opened up to Detroit, where we did I wrote the people strategy for a HUD Choice grant that we had won, which is a $50 million investment in a community. And then I wrote the people strategy for a choice grant in Cleveland. And so then that took me to another part of Cleveland. And then I helped the team with some projects in Indianapolis. And so now I'm getting to see how this works and housing is working in the region, right? How different cities are approaching it. What are the same problems and what are sort of like region specific? And I just thought it was an incredible education and one that I actually didn't realize I was getting until we until we hit the campaign trail and everyone started talking about housing. And frankly, I just thought people had some very interesting takes on housing. And I was like, I don't know that it works that way.
It's not as easy as a spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's right.
So it sounds like you're bringing so much to the table now that Connected Communities is finally public. You've been working on it over the last 2 years. And you have all this experience working on large and small projects. The choice grants are huge. Can you take us back to the Avondale Town Center and tell us more about kind of that project and how it set you
this
up for doing?
This is a very big project for Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Talked about. I've been here 20 years. Just going to go out on a limb and been like talked about for 20 years that something had to be done with Avondale Town Center. And we just saw the grand opening last week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Cincinnati was a 2012 Choice Neighborhoods Initiative awardee. And essentially, now it's $50 million under former Secretary Fudge. At the time, the Max Choice Award was $35 million. But to get these awards, you have to really leverage them 3-to-1. So just think about a total $150 million investment. And it's really to go into neighborhoods that have public housing, disinvestment, and then create this transformation plan. When I joined the Community Builders at the very end of 2017, we were entering into what we call the endowment phase. The people who wrote the grant, I think smartly, wrote a $1.47 million endowment plan to help continue the social supports after the grant ended. My job was to essentially create the endowment plan, which meant a plan for how we're going to spend, partnerships for how we're going to spend it, and an advisory board. But that role rapidly expanded because we needed extra all hands on deck in filling out the commercial space. And so, you know, as I said, the Avondale Town Center opening, you know, a couple years into it, I had keys to these buildings and I was like giving tours to funders as if I was like a construction person. And so I would have my little script and I would be like, okay, if you could imagine these beams over here, I'm just literally repeating what, you know, the construction folks are telling me, but needing to get that commercial space filled.
Now we do have a very loyal City Hall following for this podcast and I appreciate everyone who listens, of course. So we all know that Reggie's signature color is yellow. Did you wear like a yellow hard hat when you were doing this?
That would be amazing.
Actually, one of the hard hats was yellow.
Okay,
yeah,
just
yeah,
checking. That's funny.
That is funny. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I always loved yellow. And so that project was really special because we saw a couple things. One, I think when we look at Avondale, I think Avondale is a real model in this city for development without displacement. Because if we look over the past decade, we see, I think, a great mix of deeply subsidized housing, workforce housing. There have been a couple single family townhome projects. There have been one-off sort of renovations that's happening. And so you see that spectrum of housing coming online. A really active community development corporation led by Russ Harrison, Avondale Development Corporation, that works hand in hand with the community council. Sandra Jones Mitchell is the president of the community council. And so I was like, that was a great training ground to even to think about development, to think about communities, because my role really was, you know, one foot in community, being responsive to community needs. And like some of my day to day was like, you know, getting Kroger cards to give residents so that they can supplement their food income. We would register residents in It's this program where if you make $50,000 or less, you can get your taxes done for free. The Urban League runs it. And so we would bring people from the Urban League into our office to help people do their taxes. You know, we would help people with inspections, and some of the folks that worked with me and even myself, we would go in. If they failed an inspection, we would be like, okay, this is how you properly clean your stove. This is how you properly clean your refrigerator. If kids weren't enrolled in school, we would go help them enroll them in school.
This is your job. This is your job. And it just seems like this connection point would be so important for so many projects that we have. So this is your job. At some point, you're transitioning to council, right?
Yeah. So when I decided to run in 2019, it was really the end of 2019. And I started forming my entity that you have to do for a candidate. And I did all of my official paperwork. Doom, 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 February 2020.
Okay.
Of course.
Right? So,
good decision. We all know what happened in March of 2020.
And then it was insane because then everything switched to like virtual, and I was trying to like meet people and still fundraise, but we were still, you know, there was a lot of money poured into housing at that moment. And so we were still I was busier than ever actually during the pandemic. With all of the COVID relief dollars and the ARPA dollars and making sure residents were safe, setting up testing. We had set up testing in our building. We worked with the community and Children's and Center for Closing the Health Gap because we had that large parking lot. And so we would do a lot of drive-through testing events. And so, you know, I was like working to get permits and working with all of this stuff. But it just really affirmed my decision to run because I just got a real sense of how the public sector, the private sector, social services can actually all work together to achieve a common goal. The real opportunities there, but the deep challenges there as well. And I think the importance of someone coming in and understanding everything in life, I think, when you think about like money and government and development and investments, is risk mitigation. Is risk mitigation. Like when you do something, it there's a risk involved. And then the question is, who bears the brunt of that risk? And that's a negotiation.
Yes.
Right? That's a negotiation. Sometimes it's government, sometimes it's private entities, sometimes it's, you know, community members. And that has been, I think, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned is like risk mitigation, who bears the brunt of the risk, and who creates the conditions for folks to feel comfortable and safe enough to take a big step into something that might feel really uncomfortable.
So we're going to jump ahead a little bit. Surprise! Reggie wins. Then the mayor selects who is the chairperson of each of the council committees. You started out as chairman of the Equitable Growth. I'm so old that this committee's had a lot of names. So tell me the name of the
right one. Equitable Growth and Housing.
Yeah, okay. Equitable Growth and Housing. So you do that. That gives you more of really the city side of things,
yeah.
Right? And so then the mayor decided you were really ready to take the big step. There's just no question about it in City Hall. As important as that committee is, and it is, especially these days at City Hall, you are the budget chair now. And that role is critical, and you learn a lot of new skills there.
That's
for another
podcast,
probably. So that's kind of what you're doing now. But when all of this is happening, you do take the lead on something called Connected Communities. And I want you to tell us about that. And it's yourself. And this is really a mayor initiative, too. He believes very deeply in it. But things come from council, and you're really the lead on this.
Yeah. So Connected Communities really came out of a density ordinance that failed in March of 2022. So in the previous administration...
I thought we don't talk about that. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I think it's important because when we talk about, like, you know, we've been doing this for 2 years, it's really been 2 years and some months, right? And this is not a new conversation. So that's the other thing. People are like, it just came out of nowhere. It didn't. When we passed what was issue 7 in 2020, the sales tax increase...
For the bus system.
For our regional transportation system. Former council member Landsman, and I believe maybe it was former. I know. Let me just not misspeak. I know former councilmember Landsman with a couple of his colleagues. They had put forth a motion for the administration to look at zoning changes along transit-oriented development. So that happened like right after Issue 7 passed. And then the chamber commissioned a report about transit-oriented development right after that. And then the Urban Land Institute wrote a long report about transit-oriented development in 21. And then Councilmember Keating proposed a density ordinance that was really simple. It wasn't a perfect bill, but having worked in affordable housing development and having worked in projects that I saw that were delayed because of zoning changes and zoning variances, to me, it was a no-brainer. I was like, oh, this makes sense, right? So I like jumped aboard. I was like, yeah, I'm going to support this. This is makes a lot of sense. Everyone wasn't there, right? We didn't have a lot of support for it. That was
This is going to be a running theme is what we're talking about. When Reggie said everyone wasn't for it, change is scary.
Yes.
We've in a city of neighborhoods. Talk a little bit about that, Sydney.
I mean, there are 52 neighborhoods in this city, and it's also the greater Cincinnati region thinks they also have a say in how development goes within the actual 52 neighborhoods. So it must be hard to please every single neighborhood, and connected communities is thinking about the city at large, but also hyper locally. And I just want to put it out there that our zoning code is almost 100 years old, right?
Yes.
So this was extremely necessary to think about. I mean, we didn't even want to go another 10 years without trying to change it.
That is exactly right. And when we think about some of the major updates to our zoning code within that 100 years was in the late 70s and early 2000s, which was really a huge push towards single family homes. And the reason was, and it made a lot of sense, cities were in preservation mode. Leaderships were like, listen, we do not want to lose residents to the suburbs. We want to keep people here, and we need to keep people here who are owning homes. And so a real big push was about what was called the suburbanization of urban cities. And so essentially it's like, let's make lot sizes bigger. Let's center driving and center parking to essentially say, hey, you don't need to move to an outer ring suburb. You can stay right here in the city and have that sort of suburban experience. So that was a choice that we made, right?
And we're not alone in that. Most cities did that too.
Most cities, right? Like this is the thing. Most cities did this. And at the time, I do believe it was the right choice, right? It was the right choice. But now we're in a different space, right? We are actually growing as a city. People are moving into cities. And when we talk about housing shortages, I think it's really important to understand those numbers and what that means. It doesn't mean that 40,000 people in the county and 28,000 people, and this is according to that 2017 list study, are without homes. It means that 28,000 people are either experiencing rent burden or they are experiencing sort of a space burden, right? Like the housing that they are in does not fully meet their needs. And that includes housing mobility. So I love this idea I talk about all the time. I live in Northside, love Northside. We have a great house there. If my husband and I ever wanted to not live in a house and live in a condo or live in a row home that has an association because we didn't want to mow our lawn, we actually don't have much choice at all in our neighborhood. We'd had to leave our neighborhood, right? And a thriving city, people have housing choices in their neighborhood.
Which we're seeing in College Hill, also a different conversation. But College Hill has really become like this model of you can move there as a young person, you can have a family, you can sell that family home, then there's places you can live as an empty nester, and then there's places you can live as a senior.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're talking about.
That
we're
is exactly
there.
Right.
The Kirks, who oversee some of these neighborhoods, understand this, and we are headed in some good directions, I think.
That's exactly right. And I think that when we start to think about tools in the toolbox of housing, right? You have obviously the money, the investments, the subsidies, the incentives that get you there. But then you also have to tackle what you are allowed to build. And the thing with connected communities is that it's really actually a return to Cincinnati's very dense past. some of the pushback we get around connected communities, I'll hear people say, well, I live in Hyde Park, or I live in North Avondale, and we have great streets that are housing diverse. We have single families, we have duplexes, we have triplexes. Like, why are you trying to change that? And what we're saying is that we're not. But currently, it is illegal to build anything but a single family home in most of the city. And in fact, one of the things that has contributed to the housing shortage is that when these duplexes and triplexes became vacant, and then people bought them, they had to rehabilitate them into single family homes. So even though there is investment, we lost units. And so all we're saying is that, like, this is just a part of the DNA of the city of Cincinnati. You're just legalizing what is possible.
Right. And I would love to ask you a little bit about the engagement process of connected communities, because it has been a long time coming.
Let's say really quick.
Yes.
Let's do a timetable.
Yes.
We've been talking about this. Liz Keating's density ordinance failed. You double down. We're going to try again. There has been a lot of talk about it. But at the moment that we're at is it's headed to Planning Commission on May 17th.
Yes.
The ordinance was unveiled last week. So
Thursday, April 11th.
Thank you. Thursday. I love a good timeline, you guys. You know, you'll see. I'll write them for the website. So April 11th, then there's two.
There was a staff conference on Thursday, April 25th, and then there's a staff conference Tuesday, April 30th.
Then it goes to Planning Commission. You think it'll come to council the following week?
It'll come to council. It'll come to Equitable Growth on Housing, I believe, on the Tuesday, I think, is June 4th. And then with the hopes that it will go to full council on Wednesday, June 5th for passage.
So back to engagements, once this kind of became public, the city planning department has done an extensive job.
Yeah.
And so have you. Speaking to community members and stuff behind the scenes, I'm sure I know the mayor has also been spreading the word about connected communities. Yeah. One thing that I noticed, especially on the engagement report, which is available online, most of the people that showed up to talk with you guys were homeowners. So how does that kind of like skew the data? This is a renter heavy city, and a lot of the potential developments that we could create if connected communities passes are, again, multifamily, largely rentals, probably.
Yeah. So two things. The way when we saw that that was the case, that was the real push for our survey. So we did a survey in the fall of 22. 1,271 respondents, and over 60% of those respondents were renters. Additionally, the planning committee, department did five pop-up engagements around the city, outside of coffee shops, transit centers, et cetera. Again, getting more at renters. And so we made some pivots to make sure that we were trying to engage those renter voices.
And can you recall any of the concerns that specifically renters had about the plan, or things that they thought were promising?
Yeah, so overwhelmingly, folks who are renters who are experiencing a crunch in choice were like, "Yes, yeah, this is
great. Options.
We need options." And many people, despite I think our city has a view of itself as a car-centric city. But the reality is that 25% of people in our city don't own cars.
Wow.
That's significant. That's not a small number. And we also collectively as a region voted to increase our sales taxes to support our transit system. And our transit system is the only system that actually grew during COVID. We have, our ridership has grown since pre-pandemic. And, you know, we've gone from no 24-hour bus routes to about three or four 24-hour bus routes, to increase crosstown routes, to transit centers. So we have a great transportation system that is growing. And just a couple weeks ago, the director of the Federal Transportation Administration was in Cincinnati. My chief of staff and I spent 3 hours with her doing like a bus tour. And she was like, "This is amazing. I like, you guys are doing incredible. Other regional transportation systems are not as plugged in and connected with local leadership, your expansion, your ideas, your Everybody Rides Metro. And so I do think that it's important for us as a city to update our schema around public transportation because it is changing, it is growing, and to be able to then build housing along those transportation centers. And we think about those bus rapid transit lanes that connect two of our major job centers, uptown and downtown. When I was a dancer and I danced for Ballet Austin.
Oh, see, why didn't I ask about that? I know.
He's connecting the dots now.
Yeah, connecting the dots. I didn't own a car because I didn't make enough money to afford a car when I was dancing. And I was in Austin for 7 years. And I lived in three apartments over those 7 years. And every apartment was off the number one line because that was the major bus line.
Could you do that here? Looking right now, could you say I could be that person in Cincinnati and live like that?
As it exists without connected communities.
I think you probably could do that in a couple of neighborhoods, right? Not the further north you get would be harder. Right. You like in the sort of urban core, I think that's a possibility.
Oh, but also the further north you get, the less the rents are.
That's right.
So that it is important that that things do happen north of us.
Yes.
So people can afford to live. Yes. Young people.
Right. And I think housing choice isn't just about the cost of your housing. It is, like you said, about the type of housing, because people want to upgrade if they have families or just make more money overall. You want to be able to, hopefully, if you want, stay in your neighborhood and go from a big multifamily apartment, single unit, into a townhome one day, into maybe a single family if you're ambitious.
Yeah. And that's right. And filtering does happen, right? And so filtering is this idea that as more housing units come online, existing housing units become cheaper. And I always share with people, think about this. We haven't seen this in a while, but you used to drive around cities and you would see these big banners out that says rental specials, first month's rent free. If you pay your deposit 2 months and,
this is true.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
That's called filtering. Why are people doing it? There was more supply that met demand. So people had to market their apartment complex. And so these are concepts that are not made up. We used to see them, but you don't see that now because the moment a unit opens up, it's snatched up off the market. And so it's real that if you create more supply, right? When if you talk to any realtor, and I always tell people, talk to people who own apartments, who own realtors, they are constantly checking in with what are the going rates for apartments and adjusting their rents based on what's happening, right? They don't just set a price and say, okay, I'm going to get the maximum amount. They know they're not going to be able to get the maximum amount if their unit, let's say their unit doesn't have an in-unit washer and dryer. But down the street, an apartment complex opened up and there's washer and dryers in the units. They have to adjust their price accordingly. This happens all of the time. So this is not just, and I get really frustrated when people compare it to trickle-down economics, because it's not trickle-down economics. It's truly supply and demand that we see in play all of the time.
So we are running out of time, and this is the biggest conversation, you guys. You can really expect more from Sydney and I, and we're going to let you know how you can listen to Council. We'll keep you apprised of how you can really engage with Council and keep talking about this, and Sydney and I are going to be writing a lot about this. But one thing that Sydney and I did want to ask you before this conversation is over is there does seem to be some fear about it. And what do you tell people when you hear this?
Yeah. So first of all, I want to say I recognize the fear. And one of the reasons why I recognize the fear is that there have been a number of communities in this city that have weathered and endured a lot. And people have bought their homes in these communities and they have invested and they've seen their kids grow up. And they're like, listen, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why are you coming over here meddling in this piece? And so I really understand that. But what we're saying is that changing the zoning doesn't change the nature of a community overnight. We are making decisions around zoning that you see the impacts of 5-10 years down the road. why this is important is because when we look at cities like Nashville, Austin, Texas, Boulder, these growing cities, they just started to blow up and they didn't have a plan. So everyone loves going to Nashville. Everyone hates the traffic in Nashville. Everyone loves going to Austin. Everyone hates the rents in Austin. Austin and Nashville are doing the same thing that we're trying to do now around zoning to mitigate the negative impacts. We are literally making space for neighbors. Right now, if someone's aunt or uncle needed to come to your house and move in with you because you needed to take care of them, or they just, you wanted to have roommates, what do? You rearrange the furniture. You make space for people who are coming. We are essentially trying to plan our growth. So as we bring job centers, right? We think about Ready, who just at MedPace and those 1,100 jobs, right? That's 1,100 people coming into the city, right? We're creating the conditions to make space for people to come into our city. And that actually is proactive, and that I think will have a more positive impact on neighborhoods maintaining their stability and their diversity and their affordability.
One thing I think is interesting is just that I'm not sure if every neighborhood needs to experience gentle or substantial growth. I mean, with connected communities, you're proposing certain footprints, like half mile, quarter of a mile around business districts, bus and transit routes, to basically open up, you know, developers the opportunity to build more housing in these areas. But business districts like in Over the Rhine, for example, I know it's a historic district, but take that away, like, it's already very dense. And I think that might be the argument that some other communities have when it comes to this overall plan. Like, do we really need more growth in every single neighborhood?
Yeah, so connected communities does not supersede any of the historic overlays.
Of course.
Right? Or any of those overlays, right?
Just as an example.
But just an example, right? But if you were to say outside of OTR and maybe Hyde Park, mm-hmm. all of our neighborhood business districts are struggling. And in College Hill, Sleepy Bee Cafe, great cafe, just closed. What did they say? They said, listen, Saturday and Sunday, it's great. We need Monday through Thursday foot traffic. Every neighborhood plan says we want a thriving, walkable neighborhood business district. You need people living in proximity to those business districts to support businesses. And so, you know, I'll give you OTR and I'll give you, you know, maybe Hyde Park business districts, but beyond that, every other business district of our 38 business districts could use support in having residents living near the business districts to bring the amenities that we need to bring, right? And also when we look at at our neighborhoods and development, and you know, this is in our connected communities presentation, most neighborhoods in the past 10 years have netted, you know, less than 50 units created.
Right, that's really bad.
Yeah, especially when we wanna grow.
When we wanna grow. And when we have needs and when we want to have communities where we don't have to necessarily drive, you know, across the city to be able to just go to a small corner bodega, right? And just pick up your bread and your meats or something and small to be able to do that. Have your gym and your laundromat be down the street. Have a little breakfast spot that you can go and grab something on the way there, right? This sort of like more small scale but personable businesses that really have enough people in their neighborhood that they can stay open Monday through Thursday.
All right. So as much as I want to keep talking about this, we do have to go. And I feel like you have a busy day.
That was so fast. That was so fast. I love it.
Thank you for coming in and chatting about us. This is not the last we've heard of it, for sure.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for asking such thoughtful questions. I really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah. We understand that it might be a complex topic, but really, if you break it down, it makes a lot of sense to look deeply at our zoning code, and we will see how this plays out.
And yeah, that's our job. Someone pays Cindy and I.
Folks, you don't have to do it. I'll do it for you.
No, that's great.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
best podcast conversations are the kind that you keep wanting to keep talking.
Absolutely.
But that is not how the podcast works. So I was serious. We're really going to keep writing about this. Honestly, what do we know in the news business? The closer we are to things, the more we want to write about it, because it's when people are really paying attention.
Yes. And like we discussed in the conversation, there's been a lot of engagement around connected communities, but it has been in select neighborhoods and in these pop-ups he'll talk about. So if you haven't heard of this, I would say that's probably an issue. And so we want to educate you on it, so you know what's going on in the next 2 months.
Absolutely. So talking about zoning is so Cincinnati. That's not the fun part of That's So Cincinnati, though. So we were talking about the University of Cincinnati earlier, and my That's So Cincinnati moment of this week, and I can't believe I've never done this before, is I had the opportunity to go to the DAP fashion show. So the University of Cincinnati has this amazing fashion school. It's known all over the country. You wouldn't say, you know, hey, Cincinnati's a mecca for fashion, but it really is.
Love it.
So over at Ovation, across the river, they put on a fashion show for the seniors in DAP, and it was absolutely incredible. Like, I just felt like I was looking at future, like, New York runways for the students who they put on a fashion show. That's kind of like they called it their capstone project, and they created collections with a whole theme, just like you would see at New York Fashion Week. And the theme, then they had all the different looks and how the looks put together, and they used local models. It was really an incredible experience to see the creativity that's happening here in Cincinnati. It was exciting.
Honestly, I'm not surprised. Cincinnati is underrated, and we excel at a lot of things.
We do. And these kids, I don't want to say kids. These young people are just, I can tell they're going to go really far with this. And so it was spectacular to see.
That's amazing. Wish I were there.
All right, you guys. So that's a wrap on another podcast. Sydney, thank you for helping.
Thanks, Sherry.
All right, we're going to have her again for sure. Maybe even to talk more about connected communities. All right. Thanks, guys.